This is a production of Cornell University.
Order. First item on the agenda is call for late additions. Do we have any late additions, Professor Hatch?
Yes, I'd just like to request that we move item 4-7-9 up to the item 4-7-7
after the Gannett?
6-6 before, 7.
Immediately following Gannett update?
Right, please.
So there's a motion to amend the orders of the day to move the last item of business of the day to just after the Gannett update. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the orders of the day are amended. Are there any other late additions? Hearing none, first item, approval of the minutes of March 24th, 2015. Is there a motion to pass the minutes? Yes, by Mr. Professor Booker, a second?
Second.
Are there any amendments to the minutes? Hearing none, I ask members' unanimous consent to approve the minutes of March 24, 2015 as presented in your read-ahead package. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the minutes of March 24th are adopted. Next up, abbreviated updates, and before I turn that over to the Vice Chair, I have two items. First, there was planned to be an organizational meeting on May 5th, Tuesday, May 5th, for the next assembly to elect or potentially elect new members. I am going to need to declare at least the first portion of that meeting to be an actual regular meeting for the purposes of voting UARH, the CPC charter changes. There will be more about that later, but we're going to have to delay the vote from today to May 7th. Or May 5th, sorry. UAR13, which is our standard end-of-term resolution of appreciation, I will introduce that at the next meeting. We will need to pass that on the 5th. And although maybe we'll get an update here from Professor Wayne in a minute, UHRB appointments for next year, will they be ready this session? Gina is not here.
I'm hoping.
So it is, if those people come through and the CJC can do their work, then on May 5th, we would have a resolution, probably resolution 14, approval of UHRV members for AY 16 and 17, I guess, to your appointment letter. But that is all pending. Separately, organizational meeting May 5th. At my count, by May 5th, 14 of the 18 seats of the University Assembly will be filled by May 5th. May 5th would traditionally be the meeting that we hold internal elections for chair, vice chair, and so on. This year, there is a new wrinkle. The Employee Assembly has changed their elections calendar, and so there are three EA members, the chair plus two, that will not be known by the May 5th meeting, and probably not even till late May or even June, so that they could not stand for leadership. So on May 5th, the members of next year's assembly need to determine whether they're going to appoint an interim group, UA exec, to stand over the summer and then hold their internal organization meeting, the first meeting of next year, which would be in September, or whether they're going to hold their elections on May 5th, as would be our traditional practice. Again, the downside of holding on the 5th is we don't know who those EA people could be. It could be Greg Meese, could be Bridget Schaffer, could be somebody who might want to run for leadership and you might want to look to leadership. So that's the opportunity cost that you need, those who are going to be seated next term, need to consider. So I make no recommendation other than May 31st, I rotate off, I turn into a pumpkin. So you need to declare somebody for the president and others to engage effective June 1st at the May 5th meeting as a very minimum. And past that, it's up to you. Any questions about that? I see creased eyebrows, Professor Booker. I don't know. Mr. Meese, I believe, is at Vice President Murphy's retirement thing and will probably be here late Perhaps we can circle back around later. But I think I'm sure it had to do with, you know, problems they have with staffing and reorganizing. And they thought their elections calendar would serve them better as an assembly. But it does impact your decisions for the 5th. And, again, I make no recommendation either way other than you need to replace Peter first. Please. You can replace me today if you want. I will entertain a vote of no confidence. Mr. Battaglia.
Thank you, Chairman Blair. From the UA exec, two things. One, the Assembly has received an invitation from Ulysses Smith, a member emeritus who now works in the Office of Inclusion and Workforce Diversity, to attend tomorrow's BART, which is the Bias Assessment Response Team meeting, 1:30 and 3:16 Day Hall. We've been requested to send or solicit volunteers. Are there anyone who would like to go?
This is probably an outgrowth of Resolution 11. You'll hear more about Resolution 11 later in the meeting, but there was some concern that not all the same set of facts was known, and so they set up a meeting for all the assemblies, kind of on short notice, tomorrow at 1:30 in 3:16 Day Hall, and they would very much like to have some representation here. Cora Best has already said she cannot attend. She's the chair of the Campus Welfare Committee. And the sponsor, the underlying sponsor of R11, who is an undergraduate, also was not able to attend. So is there anybody else?
We do have several undergraduates who are attending from the essay. I'm not sure if
this would be our chance to have our own input and to hear back directly. I don't mind hearing from others, but it's really a matter of if nobody volunteers, we're just going to have to ask for the clip notes or a redo. But I would like to think in 18 people, somebody is available tomorrow at 1:30. Come on, people. Pull out your smartphones. Somebody sign up. What's it on? I'm sure your students would appreciate it. Bye. Rosemary? No?
1:30.
Yes. You can make it? Very well. Thank you, Mr. Listow.
Also, we've also been requested to appoint two members to the Policy 6.4 Working Group. This is more of a long-term. We will need to know by the 10th, I recall. And they are going to be looking at identifying issues in 6.4 to streamline the policy as well as associated procedures, identify the constituents, specific constituents related issues, and as well as create a mechanism to solicit feedback on 6.4.
We've asked to provide two members. I don't know whether the JA, who is president of the room, has anything she would like to add.
I was just going to say, I'll really make a plug for that because when I took last time, we identified some of my ideas and some of the things we're working on and things that need to be fixed and just before. Actually, my colleague Sarah Ackle is the investigator who handles all of the sexual assault investigations. She always gets to we really want to make sure that we're treating the community at the ground level rather than waiting to come back to the community with the finished product. Particularly, people already want to buy it. We want to get the ideas. We want to get ideas from people and not assume that we talk about all the ideas that we share. So we don't expect a lot of meetings. I think that we would be identifying that there would be two meetings in April and then one in the fall. So it's not a huge time commitment. It's a big commitment. We have some reading before the meeting where really trying to figure out ways to talk to other people that you're connected to. But the meetings themselves have been a huge time commitment. It's super important. Really important.
6.4 and the campus code are intertwined. That really is heavily UA job jar in my parlance. We really should have two people fully vested on this group. We've certainly been invited.
I just like to start on the group.
So we have a volunteer. Do we have another?
I'll do it. I don't know if I really can because I won't be on the UA next year, but I'll be here.
It would be preferable if you know you're going to be on the UA next year. Aren't you graduating?
I'm going to graduate school.
Oh, that's right. You will still be here. I would, from the purposes of this standpoint, we could also, I think, consider Matthew and Dimini, if I pronounce that even remotely right. In Dimini.
Yeah, if no one wants to do it, I'll do it.
Well, we've got two, Matthew and Juliana. Are there others? I'm seeing ducking heads. Then, given your hesitation, are there any objections to appointing Juliana and Matthew to serve as our representatives?
No.
Then, without objection, so ordered. Other things from the UA exec?
Not a thing from the UA exec. Also, actually, I might add, Ulysses Smith will be here on the 21st giving us a brief presentation on tours and destinations. And then with that, I turn to, is there any updates from the other constituent assemblies that are of importance? Hearing none, I turn back to the chair.
That's it. Next item of the day is UA Resolution 9 and 10. Ms. Bailick, we can also bring them up if you'd like to, Matthew. Would you like to?
Of course.
Just briefly, or to the level you think you need to, and then we'll open the floor for discussion.
Sure. So both of these resolutions come to a vote today. They are basically about empowering the CJC to create and maintain a bill of rights for every member of the pronounced community, and also giving the power to also be incentive to a working group that would consist of members from all areas of the Cornell community and all relevant stakeholders, be it the JIA's office and the JCC's office, so that these people can come together and do some grassroots collaboration to make sure that all of our policies on campus are consistent and clear and conveyed well to everyone here. CJC worked really hard on these resolutions. A lot of it was inspired by some of the work that you saw from Amanda's presentation, Amanda's presentation earlier in the semester. That's pretty much it. I'm happy to take any questions or comments, but I think I explained a lot of the details last time.
Amanda has said she will be here, but she's running late. I think she may also be a vice president for this celebration. As members contemplated, maybe members have comments. I haven't seen anybody make eye contact yet. But on Resolution 9, lines 17 and 18, it says, whereas there is no established committee to ensure that all of these campus policies are consistent in their language and in their execution. If by no established committee you mean on one of the assemblies or something like that. Okay. Because the policy, there is a policy office who does have a website with all the policies listed, and when they entertain policy changes and all that stuff, they do their diligence to make sure they're not writing something that conflicts with other policies. So I didn't want it to be construed that there's nobody at the university minding the store with regard to official policies in the university. They are, and there's a staff office that does that.
Maybe I would be friendly to an amendment that says there is no established,
shared governance.
Or shared governance committee. Shared governance, I'll probably better. I'm open to changing that language, but the intention is more of that there are really a lot of the individuals on campus don't really see that for happening.
Professor Booker?
Complex enough that you may want someone that actually has
would say, more like a professional oversight as opposed to the committee that changes on a regular basis, that may not be actually committed to some of the nuances that actually are involved. And it would be one thing, another way to go would be to actually try to have some sort of ongoing, regular, you know, we have oversight of a number of different groups on campus where they come and make reports. Is this something you want to actually get a report on as opposed to, because, for instance, are you really willing to go and dive deeply into the statute of the rules and regulations on statute of limitations to make sure that there are consistencies in terms of how that's done relative to other categories on campus? It would be way more complex.
Yeah, we want complex. I think what we're realizing is that there are people, that there are staff who are doing some of this stuff, but and whether or not they're engaging with the community at all is another story, but from at least our perspective, it seems to us that we could all be doing a better job collaborating and looking at these things together in the language of every specific community within our larger community. Basically, the point is that yes, a committee exists, but a staff committee is very different than having a working group where real collaboration and new and innovative ideas can happen. And we want this committee to be an incentive. We don't want the committee just to be receiving reports. We want this, it's not even a committee, it's a working group. We want this working group to be people who actually have some sort of leverage to make changes in the policies on campus. And we want these people to really be able to get into the nitty gritty of these things. So I'm more than happy to change the language in line 17 to make it say there's no established shared governance committee.
So for instance, that means to make changes to the statute of conduct?
The committee wouldn't have power to change it. The committee wouldn't be able to vote to change it. The policy owner who still owns the policy. The point of this is that there needs to be people talking and bringing up concerns about these policies. Specifically, this list is about bringing everyone in the same room and making sure that these discussions are happening on a regular basis. So remember the presentation that Amanda, the judicial clerk office, gave earlier in the year about how and there are some things that we could improve in terms of like the disciplinary system, how it's confusing the way some of the policies are written, and it's hard to tell, you know, what a certain disciplinary action actually means based on the code, and it refers to another code. It's complicated, and the fact of the matter is that we want everyone in the same room so that we can be discussing these things together, and if there's a problem or inconsistency, there will be the constituents in the room to be able to vet those concerns.
So basically, you want a representative of each one of the communities that's responsible for this to be actually part of it.
Yes. We want it to be collaboration. We want there to be a really official and tangible outlet for a concerned student like me to say, you know, I've had some friends who have gone through 6.4 process, and there were some things that were really confusing, and, you know, is there any way that you guys could consider improving this part of the policy? Or, I have a friend who was accused of an academic integrity violation, and it's not even the students, right? It could be a faculty saying, you know, really, the handbook for faculty should be more consistent with this policy that refers to employees. So how do we fix that? How do we go about this? It's about generating new ideas and making sure that there's a process.
I would note for the numbers that Amanda Minkus, the Judicial Coach Counselor, is now in the room. Next up, Mr. Pataglia.
Thank you, Chair. But I agree with Sarah's point. I think that having this, or having a working group that looks at the various policies is important, especially talking with the JCC as well as Sarah and whatever else, the multiple people who've worked on this. There's the policy advisor group and the policy pages are the university policies, but they don't have everything. There's different parts that are scattered. There's different policies that are all over the place, and having them in one central location is a very good idea. And with that, I'd like to motion to amend to insert on line 17, so it reads, whereas there is no established committee within shared governance to ensure that all these campus policies are consistent in their language and execution.
Is there a second to the motion? Second from Ms. Bailey. Sorry, the name slipped me just for a second. Next up is Juliana.
I just wanted to build off the fact that, like, if you go to the Cornell webpage, you type in policy, you get direct for this specific resolution, you get direct to PhD to a student, you get a list of policies. So for example, if you're a parent, your student's in trouble, and you don't know how to navigate it, everything that's on there is student. And I believe in this resolution specifically, you actually have performance language about what you're allowed to do as a faculty member or as a staff member, as a student, or as a community member. It's really kind of changed the campus dialogue around all these policies that we have. And for me, that's why I think that Resolution 9 is incredibly important.
Is it Jennifer? Are you next?
I feel like there's a lot of different things being talked about. The resolution talks about consistent language, which is different from confusing people, and it's different from what you were just saying about, you know, you go to a website and there's a list part to navigate.
Yeah, and I'm also referencing one. Yeah. So there are several things that are going on in the resolution, and that's why we split it up. Basically, we want to have a working group, part of the CJC, and we want that group to be able to, A, draft the Bill of Rights for everyone in the Cornell community so that there is that positive language that we are talking about. And these words wouldn't be coming from, you know, midair. They would be coming from existing policies and existing language that everyone on the campus already has. Another thing that we're talking about, I think it's in Resolution 10, is that all campus policies, including campus conduct, academic integrity, et cetera, are housed on different websites. So we want the all up-to-date campus policies to be generally accessible by a community rights and responsibilities website. So part of this is just getting all the policies in one location so that as everyone on the campus actually can find them and compare them.
I want to clarify, there is a single web page with all university policies, but this would be a specific subset of policies dealing with certain issues. Professor Lowe, you're next.
Hey, you're next. In the past, what the CKC did. What I read here, where it says, by delegation from us, the committee will review any proposed motion related to campus code of conduct. That means this subcommittee is now going to have to review what CJC comes down with.
Are you reading that?
Can I
that's
between this committee and the CJC.
So
I'm on the floor for like 3 minutes, yes. So that I can just explain to everyone what's happening. Okay. So what you're looking at is Article 4, Section 4.1 of the University Assembly bylaws. You must amend it, but it has the rent. There are two different resolutions. Maybe we need to talk about these resolutions separately because it's getting kind of confusing.
And so to clarify for Professor Lowe, the wording that is in italics is already in the bylaws. The red is the new on line 29. That would be the single edition. But the whole section 4.1 is repeated here for completeness. Back to Ms. Bailey.
So basically what we want to do is first give the CJC a little bit of authority over creating, maintaining, and making a community bill of rights available. And after we give the CJC that authority, then we can move on to Resolution 10. Resolution 10 is a specific working group that would be part of the CJC that is assigned specifically to that one bullet point in red, creation, maintenance, and availability of the community bill of rights. So, we're hoping that this committee doesn't have to really do much advocating for the policies that we're talking about with all these lists on one website, because like Jim said, the resources are putting all of those links on one website should be a pretty simple thing to do, and this committee shouldn't have to do that. But what the committee can do is sit together, talk about what are the rights and responsibilities of the people on this campus, whether that be students, staff, or faculty, and what do we expect of everyone as they come through the campus, where the Bill of Rights is coming from. Then there's another additional element that in the future, this working group has the authority to kind of collaborate if they see an issue. Right? I'm not saying that there's a ton of issues and that there's a ton of inconsistencies. Do I think that all policy mechanisms are perfect? No, but I think we probably could use this working group now to improve them. Yes. So, we're not here to talk about, if these resolutions don't exist right now to talk about which policies are consistent, which policies are not, which policies should be included in them, which policies should not be. This is about giving CJC the authority, establishing this working group so that they can do the nitty-gritty, because we have to get, this is work that should have been happening a long time ago.
Welcome and come in. Professor Hatch first, and then back to Professor
I'd like to move that we accept both resolutions.
The resolutions have been moved, although we need to vote on the amendment to Resolution 9 first. So you're calling the question. You're calling the question on Resolution 9?
I thought it was friendly.
Well, he actually made a motion, so we'll go through the process briefly if you don't mind. So there is a motion to align, to amend line 17 of Resolution 9 to read, whereas, comma, there is no established committee within shared governance to ensure that all of these campus policies are consistent in their language and in their execution. Are there any objections to that amendment? Hearing none, the amendment is adopted. Now, coming back to the main motion, are you calling the question, Professor Hatch, on Resolution 9? Or
can we do it for both at the same time?
We need to approve 9 before 10.
All right. I'd like to call a question on Resolution 9.
Is there an objection to calling the question on Resolution 9? Hearing none, we will now vote on UA Resolution 9 as amended. All in favor, please raise your placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I count 8, 4. Against? I see none against. Abstentions? I see 1, 2, 3. Resolution 9 passes by a count of 8-0-3.
Yeah, I've reached out to every single constituent assembly about this. Previously, we made this to the
CJC. Resolution 10 is now before us. It is a companion piece and gives the working group authority to actually put a face on the authority now just granted to UA or given to the CJC. Is there further discussion on UA Resolution 10?
I move we call question on this. I move it first.
See, exactly the same as it was last week when I presented, or not last week, was it almost a month ago?
Two weeks ago.
So.
I want to move the resolution.
There is motion to move the resolution. Is there a second? From Mr. Wayne, Professor Wayne. We'll call the question on UA Resolution 10. The question has been called. If we want to continue debate, we need to vote down the resolution to continue the debate. I can't remember how we do that.
Okay.
But yeah, right?
We have to vote to vote.
So you can deny, this is a vote to vote. If you want to call the question, vote to vote. If you vote this down, then we will continue the discussion. If you vote for, then we will actually vote on the resolution.
Right.
Aha, I now remember all the
information.
Point of information.
She needed to express why she feels more discussion will be beneficial, because I think that might help in deciding if.
I mean, it just looks like some members of the assembly want to continue the discussion and we can move ahead with it. I think to discuss Resolution 9, we really just give the time effort to, discussing it again.
So the motion, the question has been called. All in favor of calling the question and proceeding to vote, vote aye. Raise your placards. 1, 2, 3. All those opposed to calling the question. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The motion to call the question is defeated. We will continue discussion.
Further questions on Resolution 10? Professor Hatch.
I just want to say that we considered the extensive last meeting, and I'm puzzled as to why we need to spend much more time on this. I'm happy we had a clarification of two words in the resolution. If there are two words, we need to be added to the Resolution 10, might be like some of the other. Otherwise, I think we can move on.
This has been socialized with not only the other shared governance groups, but with the JCC, JA, and Cornell Council. Not all organizations provided comments back, but they were given the opportunity to do so. My only concern that I've heard of Resolution 10 is concern about websites and, you know, who would maintain it and, you know, those kind of things. But the working group would have to come forth with recommendations.
And I'm assuming the group wants to form that can deal with procedural issues. Right? And if you come up with a committee that really works right, some of the
right. So that's the point of this group. The group is supposed to exist so that those inconsistencies don't exist. And the point is that all of these groups are going to be part of the working group. The working group is responsible for drafting those rights. And if there's membership from the faculty senate who know the faculty handbook on this working group, they'll be able to say, okay, don't add that line in there about whatever because it conflicts with that example. So that's why we want all constituent groups to be together in a room so that there's transparent discussion and perhaps editing of the policy of our campus. Really, this I personally think this is very not controversial. I think this is something that, as a member of the Cornell community, you should want. Like, you should want to be able to have a more streamlined say in how these policies are created, established, perhaps edited.
No, it's a point of clarification. They have no authority to change the policy. They identify the disconnects, they talk to the owners and see if they're willing to reconcile the disconnects, and the owner may say no. We are over time on this item. Do we want to continue discussion, or do we want to move to a vote?
Motion to call the question.
Second.
Okay, call the question. So the vote on the vote. All in favor of bringing this resolution to vote, say aye. With your flag is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's clearly a majority. We will now vote on Resolution 10 as presented to members. There are no amendments. All in favor of voting UA Resolution 10 as in your packets, raise your placards, please. 1, 2, 3, 4. Sorry, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 4. Against? 0. Abstentions? Seeing none, Resolution 10 passes by a vote of 12-0. Dr. Corson Riker, if you just bear with us for about 3 more minutes, we have some very quick items to dispense with. First is the confirmation or reappointment of Mary Beth Brandt as the judicial administrator for another 2 years. This is the recommendation of President Skorton. It requires our members' confirmation. Professor Wayne, do I have a motion to actually extend the appointment 2 years?
I would like to extend it to 5. But
two is the legal limit. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor of extending the appointment of Mary Beth Brandt through June 30th, 2017, please raise your placard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I see 11, 4. Against? I see 0. Abstentions? Did I miscount? I see more than 11 people. Who didn't vote? Please raise your placards again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. There we go. I see 12, 4. I saw against 0. Abstentions 0. Congratulations, Mary Beth Grant. We will notify President Skorton tomorrow of your reappointment for 2 years. The next item is a reappointment of Professor Emeritus Charlie Walcott to serve as the Ombudsman for an additional 2 years through June 30th, 2017. Mr. Battaglia, do I have a motion to extend Professor Walcott to June 30th, 2017?
I so motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, please raise your placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I know I missed somebody. 12, I see 12, 4. Against? None. Abstentions? None. Okay. Reappointment is confirmed by a vote of 12 to 0 to 0. We have one other very quick issue to dispose of. A motion to install Ms. Catherine Wong. Mr. Battaglia, would you make that motion?
I motion to install Ms. Kai Wang, Catherine Wong, as the University Assembly voting member from the Graduate Professional Student Association for the remainder of the Assembly session ending May 31, 2015, in lieu of Mr. Richard Walla.
Is there a second? All right, Professor Lowe, discussion, please, Mr. Tagley.
Mr. Walworth has left Ithaca on a formal internship through late May. The GPSA has formally recognized Catherine as the acting GPSA president during his extended absence. Richard's voting seat on the UA STEM Service position is GPSA chair. This motion would formally seat Catherine as a voting member on the UA during her tenure as acting chair for the GPSA, which is essentially through the end of this year's term. The request comes from and is fully supported by the GPSA.
Are there any questions? Hearing none, it has been moved and seconded. All in favor of installing Ms. Catherine Wong in lieu of Mr. Richard Walworth as a seated member of the Assembly, raise your placard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, I see 12, 4. Against? Abstentions? Ms. Wong, welcome to the table. And your voting credentials. Congratulations and welcome. We can give a round of applause for that. And it's killer because now she has the authority to ask all the tough questions of your presentation. We're bringing up your PowerPoint now. If you would like to take the head table, we would like to welcome back Dr. Corson Reichert, the head of campus or university health, and her two colleagues. Will you be providing a production? Mr. Greg, is it Eels? Eels?
Eels.
Welcome. Thank you and welcome. We appreciate you joining us, and we can turn slides for you or whichever you prefer. Ma'am, the floor is yours.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for having us here. Facility renovation and addition plan, and then Greg talked a little bit about mental health trends and counseling services, and Tim about our health initiatives or campus health initiatives. And then we're hoping to leave some time for questions at the end, so I think we're going to be flying a little bit, but if we're missing areas that you'd like to talk about, please interrupt. So basically, our mission is a little bit different than most healthcare organizations. Individual health and community health. So we try to take care of the entire population, being very much aware of whether we have access for the whole population and also have concerns for the people in the population that we're not seeing and that we think should use services. So our focus, of course, is primarily students, but we do see faculty and staff for some of our services, and our public health efforts really affect the whole campus. So in terms of the population, we're aware of the 22,000 students and 10 or 12,000 faculty and staff, so some of our public health efforts have been involved. Primary care, our effort here is really to do an integrated form of care where we're really treating students as whole people with minds and bodies that are very much interconnected. So our mental health services and our medical services try to work very closely together and caring for students. The urgent care piece here, we do for faculty and staff, so if they have something that comes up during the day to building in that dorm room. A special service is that lots going with that lab, radiology, pharmacy, physical therapy, all sites, whole plot. We actually more than this. We have nutrition, travel, allergy, pretty broad spectrum services. And then we do a lot in care management and referrals. So trying to help students get referrals to community specialists, following up after hospitalizations or emergencies. Student disability services is under our umbrella also, and then the CPC building and the Ag Squad, student health benefits down in College Town. We oversee the Faculty Staff Assistance Program also in College Town, and we're going to say a little more about that. We run an occupational medicine program providing support for employees. A lot of our focus there is on research support, so protecting both human subjects and researchers, looking closely with environmental health and safety. Public health, we do a lot on health promotion and education. If you haven't looked at our website, it's something you might want to do. We put a lot of information on there with a lot of links to other resources. Get involved in communicable diseases, whether it's TB or meningitis or Ebola, whatever. Working closely with both the county and the state health departments. And then we also have a significant amount of energy going into behavioral health strategies on campus, which Tim will be talking more about. So as we approach this very broad mission here, we are using a model called the Quadruple Lane from the Institute for Healthcare Improvement and the Military Health System, actually. So we're focusing, thinking all the time when we're choosing how to use limited resources on the experience of care, putting a lot of energy into access to doctors, which we'll talk a little bit more about. In addition to the individual experience of care, the population health, and the cost per capita of care, all in service of the mission of readiness to learn for the students and to the extent that we need faculty and staff care, for faculty and staff to be on site present able to work. So this is our website. If you come right into our main page here, there's a little purple arrow down there on the left, which points to the patient advocate. And again, I'm picking off some items and topics here because you don't have a lot. I want to make the point that we encourage anybody who has concerns about their ability to get care, what we don't provide, what may not have gone as well as somebody might have liked, to contact us through the patient advocate. We are a constantly changing and learning organization. Every time there's a concern expressed, we work it through our system to figure out what we could do better another time. Down in the right-hand corner here, there's a box that refers to construction, which I'll talk more about later, but just to point out that we will be keeping an updated listing of concerns or issues related to construction for anybody using our services. The arrow up on the red one is to call in after hours or any time of day. We have one telephone number that is available 24/7/365. A nurse always answering calls. We actually answer calls from people studying abroad or over the summer on vacation, whatever. If we don't have the service available or the nurse on call to be on first, we can have backup and counseling staff or physician staff. Often they will provide advice about whether emergency or medical services are needed. And then that, I want to spend just a little time with this as a portal into our information system. This is what you would see, and this actually is a portal that is available to anybody, faculty, staff, or students. Obviously, students have a little bit more going on with us, so there's more available there. But you can come into this site, see what your immunization history is, if you ever need immunization for any purpose. You can fill out appointment questionnaires. You can schedule an array of visits now online. We're going to be expanding that over the summer, which helps for students to keep hours that are long and late at night. And then there's a secure message capacity back and forth to a provider so that we can save some time to can actually renew prescriptions this way. So to talk a little bit about our health services facility project, We are starting just this week. We haven't really started breaking down a ground, I guess, but we're starting with surveying the slope, where there's going to be a new access road putting in. We'll be boarding up some windows and things soon, so we'll all be feeling the action. This is going to be a long project. It's a renovation addition, so we're renovating the entire building that we're in now. It was built in 1956. We're about double the number of students and probably more than half the number of staff in the building since it was originally built on campus. We'll be adding around the back where the two parking lots are, if you're familiar with in that building. So there'll be a brand new addition built while we are operating in the old building. It will be tough for both our staff and for the people in the building. We have a period of pile driving that's very noisy. So we'll be doing a little bit extra hours during that period. But to talk a little bit about some of the key features of the new building, this is really going to be wonderful for us, not just in allowing us to operate in a reasonable size space. We now have two and three, and occasionally four clinicians operating out of the individual office of the medical service, which is really far from ideal. In the new space, we are moving toward what we think is the ideal model for healthcare, where we actually have medical and mental health teams together on a clinical unit. And students will come in one common waiting room, whether you're being seen for a medical problem or a mental health problem, there will be no spider there. Being brought out the same door into the clinical services. But these are medical and mental health people in very close proximity to conversations. So we have psychiatrists right there for medical services. We'll also be saving a lot more space for observation. Right now, we are so tight in our building that if we have to run IV fluids for any period of time, we have to transfer students to the emergency room, which is expensive, unpleasant, and it can take a really long time. So we really look forward to being there holding those students out in place for care. We'll have more space for counseling and groups. Our pharmacy will be expanding and we'll have a bigger array of over-the-counter medications. We'll have space and health initiatives where the clinical team are working to actually bring students in to collaborate with us on projects such as resources and some meeting space. And we'll be bringing student disability services into the building right now up in the CCC building. The attic quads of the students with any kind of physical injuries, obviously, is incredibly inconvenient to have to get up there, so we're looking forward to having them on site. As I mentioned, during construction, it'll be kind of tricky to operate. This page is on our front page on the website. It will be an updated discussion of where we are in construction, what's happening, what we're doing, what you're seeing, etc. And then I'm going to put this right there. You'll see that we are during this period of pile driving from April 27th to May 16th, we'll be extending our hours so that we're operating until 8 o'clock p.m. Monday through Thursday on medical services. We'll have medical clinicians working so that we can try to fit more appointments into the time of day that's less disruptive. We're having to move office space during the summer so people like myself who are doing administrative work will move near the pile drivers and the people trying to. Here's some of those steps to talk to somebody in therapy. We'll be able to hear a little better in internal offices. So this will be a tough period. So this is an overview in general. We'll come back to this, but I'm going to turn it over right now to Frank to talk a little bit about mental health trends.
Well, you can see from the graph, the mental health trends are pretty obvious. There's increasing demand for our services. The idea was you want that blue line to match with the red. That's always been a challenge for us, and that's why we're doing these different activities. Most of our work is around doing individual therapy, group therapy, even the psychiatry, med management, so we're also in the clinic for the whole three months. We also do work with the faculty staff assistance program that puts into our service, which allows us to respond to different strategies and things happening. We're kind of all on the same page. As Janet said, we are really working to operate in an integrated way for medical counseling. So we've done is start a behavioral health consulting project where we have one psychologist who works on the medical floors for people who may not want to come to counseling but are in primary care. We know that many of the people who are at great risk aren't always identified with their depression or suicide or stroke. This is another way, so this is set of projects, which is starting to fall very well with the technology. We do a lot of outreach to the community. In our clinic, in a lot of ways, doing a lot of individual and group therapy, all this time, we see about 4,000 students a year, about 18% of the student body. And we want to see the people we're not seeing. So we're doing a lot of outreach through presentations. Some of you are aware of our Let's Talk sites on campus, which are very popular. Students can drop in. That program is developed to kind of think about culture, how culture may interfere with people seeking mental health care. We also do Let's Meditate, which is for faculty, staff, and students. Some of you may have benefited from that. And we do community consultation intervention. We have psychologists and social workers who are responding to faculty's needs and concerns about student mental health issues, where the student won't necessarily come to Let's Talk or come to consult. And then we also do the interactive screening program. We graduate student and they experience that. We send out a screening instrument through email, and we can do a survey, and we fill out a questionnaire about how they're doing, how they're doing, your stress profile, and if you have a higher score, our therapist responds through email, and tries to get folks in care. So we do a lot of things to try to reach out to people who aren't necessarily just walking in, even though that is a pretty extensive volume, looking at those kind of issues.
As Greg mentioned, that we're seeing now about 18% of the student body in a given year. And over the course of 4 years, it's now about 30% of students in the mental health service. So it's becoming a much more routine, normal part of health care.
So some of the things that we do, as Janet pointed out, the MyGannett site allows people to schedule their first appointment on the smartphone or anywhere on the internet. We can click in. If the counseling service, we do a brief phone assessment. Those are always available. We do this in the evenings. We do this on Saturdays. And students can look at and see all that are available for the week. So they can see 50, 70 appointments. And one of the things that's a challenge with any counseling service is the gifts out that you can't get in. We try to really make sure that those brief assessments are available and that you can get in. We also have a walk-in response. When people walk in, we find someone to see them. There's a cancellation or no show, we use that time to see anyone who walks in and is in a kind of urgent or situation where we're struggling. We also do a lot of collaboration with people across campus. We work with the student's office, and there's a student tragedy, our staff do community support meetings, helping people across the street, sharing resources. We work with the campus work team. This is a collaboration between students with the JA and the presidential program and the police to respond to students who are concerned in the community. So all talking together every week. And we also collaborate with some of the students from Mental Health Lives Matter. Our staff do trainings, presentations, and kind of talking to them about mental health and stigma. And then we work closely with EARS and the counseling program to the students' office. And then our staff do all the training. So we really try to connect to the community and balance that with the system of demand and push around.
So this framework that you see here, we refer to as the wheel. And you know, I'm going to start at the top and just kind of give you some highlights of the key elements of our overall framework. So starting from the top, the box that reads foster a healthy educational environment. Here we're talking not only about the academic environment, providing a supportive environment in that context, but the social environment, the climate on campus. All of these are dimensions of students' experiences that can impact their health and well-being. So everything from efforts to reduce bias-related incidents to providing late-night recreation as an alternative to the alcohol scene on campus, all of these are part of that environmental approach. The next box says promote life skills and resilience. And here it's where we're focusing on educational strategy, beginning with online education about alcohol for students before they even arrive on campus, and also strategies that we're working on to help foster resilience in students so that they can develop the skills to bounce back from the inherent stressors that they've experienced both in college and in life more broadly. In terms of the health-seeking box, this is increased health-seeking behavior. This goes back to some of the things that President Scorton said after the suicide crisis of 2009-2010, when he said, if you learn nothing else while you're at Cornell, learn to seek help, learn to ask for help. And that's a message that students hear during orientation through the real students, real stories video that all of them experience in Bailey Hall. And that's a message that we repeat through various forms. As Greg said, Cornell Minds Matter is a student organization that works very hard to promote help-seeking behavior, destigmatize counseling and mental health problems. In the next box, moving around, you see identifying people in need of care. Many of you will be familiar with either the Notice and Respond program that we have for faculty and staff, or the Friend-to-Friend program for students, where we're trying to encourage people to recognize and respond effectively when someone may be in distress. It may be a mental health problem, or in the case of students in the social environment, it may be something like an alcohol emergency. So students about the signs of alcohol poisoning and what the Good Samaritan law and policy provide. These are all efforts to move people from being passive bystanders to active agents of change. And that also applies to the issue of sexual violence. We're increasingly developing programs to help people recognize when there may be signs that a sexual assault could be occurring, and what are the steps that people can take to intervene. The next box says provide integrated mental health and medical care, which you've already heard about, so I'm going to pass over that. Delivering coordinated crisis management in addition to the 24/7 service on call that we have, that Janet mentioned. The crisis managers through coordinated team of students' office provide a network of support for students that are affected by major crises. And the last one that I would mention is reduce risks in the physical environment. This includes reducing the risk of access to lethal means of suicide by locking up chemicals in laboratories or having the nets under the bridges. It also includes reducing access to alcohol, which is often a source of harm for many individuals. And so that's part of the overall approach. Go ahead, the next slide. And then just quickly, I want to mention some of the leadership structures that we have on campus for the major health concerns that we're facing. We have an executive committee on campus climate, health, and safety. This is a group of senior administrators who provide oversight for the university councils and health policy issues. The four major councils that we have in place are the President's Council on Alcohol and Other Drugs, which looks at educational and environmental strategies, particularly related to alcohol use. The Council on Mental Health and Welfare looks at a range of issues that pertain to students' mental health and well-being from a policy perspective or cultural issues around campus and stress that affects students, and we have discourse about that. We also have some work groups and teams. We have a behavioral health oversight team of administrators that meets regularly to look at some of these issues, and a mental health policy group of faculty that look at issues related to mental health in terms of the academic environment. Our two newest councils, one was just founded about a year and a half ago, the Council on Sexual Violence Prevention. This is a response to the long-standing issue of sexual violence on this campus and nationwide. Its creation reflects sort of the current changes in societal concern about this and as well on our campus. And the Council on Hazing Prevention was formed last year to try to address hazing issues not only as they've historically been experienced in the Greek system, but in athletics and in other types of groups and organizations as well. And so there are students, staff, and faculty that are members of all four of these councils. They meet either once a semester or three times a semester, depending on the needs and the focus of the current time and the moment. But these are groups that are longstanding and will be providing leadership and guidance for these issues over time. So with that, I think we want to open up for any questions or comments.
Members? Professor Wayne.
Do you have any influence over admissions of the first part?
No.
The second part of my question is, saving for, I think admissions is looking at the external prevention of students as opposed to the internal care. So if you did have a control of admission, what would you call it?
I would say, I don't think you want your healthcare system or your mental health care system to be able to play with that. I think there's a concern. qualified to answer the question.
Well, what we are in terms of the breadth of health and mental health issues in the student body, I think, is reflective of the health of the community more broadly. I think what you see in any thriving population of people is health and mental health issues. So, kind of the same symptoms of that, and if the students who are being admitted are capable, students and probably faculty members and staff members have health issues.
Ms. Batista?
Thank you for coming. Great presentation. I actually was just in a meeting today earlier with some members of Cornell Life Matter, and we were talking a little bit more about what's going to happen with specific counseling programs during construction. I know there's difficulty for students to call and things like that right now if they're going to be constriction of those services at the time. That's my first question. I wanted to hear a little bit about that and how does that all happen?
I don't think the construction will impact that's part of having counselors available. We do prioritize people getting in, we follow up as much as we can on the ongoing therapy, and sometimes therapists will schedule somebody every other week, depending on the number of people. Those are issues we're always looking at, and also that clinical demand. But to get people around quickly.
The plan is to not cut back
on patients
at all during construction. We're finding it's really difficult to operate during the day, and we're sort of waiting to see. Then we will be forced to move more of our services off hours, but we're going to have to see how it goes.
And the plan is to move our staff around, keep the same appointment availability, and there will be not same staff on this. It's just a matter of the business makes the shop down.
And then also just to follow up on that, in terms of the whole process of constructing and building a new connect, where are student voices within that process? And do you see a way for us to fit anything in that process? Whether that be, you know, putting new student disabilities or community disabilities, is there a way to incorporate student voices to be there? Just want to see what was in the pipeline from my perspective.
Student voices about design stage?
It's about the design stage, where things are going, what things are being included.
It's been a very rapid process, frankly, because of the construction limitations that we have. We can only make moves from the old building to the new building during the summer. Certain things have to happen during the summer when the students aren't here. So we've been pretty challenged to get very much into it from our own staff. That said, in terms of the spaces and how we use the spaces, certainly some of the areas, particularly in the health promotion area, I think we will have to look to the area that I think students will be most collaboratively involved in this building. So maybe we can say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, Juliana, I really appreciate the question because we have not had an opportunity, because of our current building, to even welcome students into our space very readily. And so we're going to be very interested in talking to students about how we can use the spaces where there's flexibility for hosting student organizations and figuring out, you know, how we can really be a hub for student leadership. So we're looking forward to that. The other thing I would say is that in terms of the clinical experience, the user experience, you know, we're still trying to figure out things like, you know, the signage and the pathways around the building, what's going to be most useful, you know, to students, what's going to make most sense, and I think we're going to really need some, you know, input from students along the way. So that's something we certainly need.
Yeah, I definitely see an opportunity to point out there that I want to be a leader on the students that, you know, they're asking me something. How can I think about ways to, you know, be health promotion and think about this in a proactive sense instead of
other questions?
What can we hope for?
No, I just wanted to say thank you on behalf of the staff and probably the students and the faculty, because you have very important work to do, and it probably goes thankless at times, and especially in most recent times with things that have been going on around the university. But I think the services that you provide and the way that you're able to educate not only students but the entire community about how to sort of integrate and cross sort of constituent groups is really important and really meaningful. I've seen sort of many of you interact in different settings that I'm involved with and appreciate everything that you and your staff do. So just wanted to get that out there on the record and say thank you, because I think it's really great what you're all doing in Connecticut.
Yes, I would echo that. How can we help you? Is there anything you would hope we can do for you or that you would like us to help engage in?
Well, as mentioned, I think we'll be looking to you and the other representative bodies here to get us some feedback on various issues about how we're actually coming to the building when we get to that point. And we're going to want feedback about how we're doing during construction. So to the extent that you are all getting feedback and have it for us, please keep in touch. We have, as Tim mentioned, a group of committees where we have faculty, staff, and student involvement, and we would welcome university assembly suggestions for membership in one of those committees. We also have a student insurance advisory committee, and we will be having a healthy advisory committee where we really would like the input to try to help make some of the choices about cost versus range of services dollars of operation, all of those things that I think are important to the community. And there are many people here that have voices and constituents that we would like to hear.
Commissioner Lowe, did you have a comment or question? I will, after some time tomorrow, I'll engage you a little bit on that, because we can certainly send you meaningful representation to help on be a part of those bodies if you desire. That's a very easy thing for us to do, and something that would be desirous, I know, of our campus welfare-minded members as well. Other questions? Thank you, as Greg said, for all that you do, most of which I'm sure we have little insight in, but greatly appreciate. And we haven't had that crisis repeat since 2010, so you've obviously had a great impact, as I know others have, and we greatly appreciate all your efforts. Thank you very much. The orders of the day have been amended, and so next up, Mr. Pietrandrea.
Thank you, Mr. Blair. This is a short recap about what was established for procedures for debate for Resolution 6, divestment from companies producing or holding fossil fuel reserves. Last meeting, at the end of the meeting, a special rules of debate was passed limiting the speaking time of members as well as any community members who submit a request to speak 24 hours in advance to 2 minutes. Additionally, provisionally, we're looking at 5 minutes for introduction on the 21st, as well as 15 minutes against, 15 minutes for, time for public comment, as well as UA debate, and then eventually a vote. The resolution has been scheduled for the 21st. I'll take any questions as well.
So it's 2 minutes for community? You said it's two minutes for any for community or UA we're speaking time.
That being said, I would yield the right of time back to the chair. The chair is absent. I will continue as chair until he returns. moving forward is UA Resolution 11, which is a resolution I am sponsoring. That resolution is being withdrawn after speaking with a number of community members as well as relevant parties. There's a couple of errors that need to be amended. Therefore, the resolution is being withdrawn. Hopefully, maybe next year. Resolution 11. It's not in the packet. Correct. And then with that disposed of, moving on to the last on the day, UA Resolution 12, Charter of Veteran and Safety Working Group.
You guys done through that all that good?
Correct.
Really?
I got to move on to the wooden stuff.
I should keep on. No comments from the
truth.
Oh my God. So UA Resolution 12, introduction of charge of the Pedestrian Safety Review Working Group, Mr. Battaglia, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Blair.
This resolution is sponsored by myself, Chris Johnson, and Cindy here. I'd also like to extend a special thank you to UA Elect. I see that many of you have been valuable and really worked quite hard on this with me. This is very angry to see them jumping into the field and of course in working with them. This resolution is tackling safety on campus. It's doing is calling for the creation of a working group under the Public Safety Advisory Committee that will evaluate the effectiveness of signs and signals of pedestrian crossings, find by the way further education and awareness of pedestrian safety, looking at the corner of police to ensure that safety rules as well as chemistry limit are enforced, and it's going to have membership supported by the body. It's come about, unfortunately, the tragedy of 3 community members who were killed this past year due to traffic-related fatalities when they were walking. I think it's important that we tackle this because the infrastructure that's squarely under the purview of the assembly, and it is highly relevant all around all campus communities. You know, we had 3 deaths. Additionally, we also shopped around with various of our community members and stakeholders. And then I yield the time to the chair for any questions.
Speaking of stakeholders, the Office of Assembly thought that there's some stakeholders that have not been well consulted, so we sent some emails to them yesterday or the day before. The only comment that I've heard that's potentially adverse is there may be an opinion that some of this is a duplication of effort of a committee that already exists at the university. So we're looking into that, and the sponsors will take that all into consideration and make sure that you're aware of any comments received by others. In the process. Currently, the intent is to bring this for disposition at the first part of the April 21st meeting, but if things come to light between now and then and it needs to be significantly rewritten, that plan might change. I don't know yet, but right now that's on track. Other comments or questions? Professor Hatch.
Is there any transportation committee? I'm just saying.
You mean the campus infrastructure committee or the?
No, between the any working group that gets started for pedestrian safety and transportation. It seems to me like there should be a coordination between the two. In the sense that anything that comes up in the way of pedestrian safety, I mean, speeder way of transporting itself. and the bicycles and so forth. And so it seems to make sense to have some input of that sort so that transportation is involved in just cars.
So there's
walkers and cars.
Well, I understand, so that's why I think it's an interaction between the vehicles and the car and the walkers and the bicycles.
So there's many representatives who are on the Transportation Advisory Task Force, I think is what it's called, which is a new committee that Bridget Brady, with her taking on the role here at Cornell as the Senior Director of Transportation, put together, which has a very diverse and sort of well-representative group of individuals on that to tackle such issues. And then there is also she had recently put out a call, I know, specifically to the EA, and I'm sure probably other representative constituent groups or full members that represent that group from her task force, to be on a standing committee, which is the Pedestrian, Bike, and Traffic Safety Committee, which she's trying to put together underway.
So that's perhaps the one that was already in existence that somebody referred to?
We're not sure. We've asked for more information. So Bridget Brady has responded that she's concerned about duplication of effort. And Kathy Zoner also echoed Bridget's remarks. The question's been asked, so what's the committee that this would be duplicating? Or, you know, and we haven't received an answer yet, but I think there's going to be a conference call between sponsors and Bridget Brady in the near future. And we'll see if this is overlap and et cetera.
Great. So my only urging with this, and I think this is great, it's an important topic. I fear of over-committeeing and creating additional committees because we all have our own responsibilities within our representative constituent groups and that there are committees there. If this is an issue that we want to take up, I would potentially suggest altering the language to urge the committees that are already existing and meeting to take this on as an issue and report back to the UA, as opposed to the creation of a separate committee. Because I do think it's worthwhile for us to hear the information and be part of that dialogue. But I don't know if creating a separate sort of standing committee for this, when I believe personally there are groups of people on campus that have these type of issues as their charge, and tasking them with sort of picking this up and having a heightened awareness and saying, hey, we want you to report back to the UA because this is important to us, is probably a better way and a way that I would be in favor of the resolution.
The reason I agree with that, I mean, I was talking with Chairman Blair as well about this. I was like, the resolution is not so much, if there's an RCA that's duplicated, we couldn't find it, and that, in my mind, that's also a problem because we can't figure out who's doing something, and I doubt other people who are interested in looking for it. So part of the goal is that if there's another committee, send the request information. And the way it's worded right now is that if this were to go through, there's not another committee, we'd be calling for the Chair of the Public Safety Advisory Committee, which is an associate committee of the UA, which already has. Which is already passed with looking into safety on campus to look at this. But I'm not stuck on any particular body. I think this is that the assembly should be informed about and that there should be progress made, and that's through working with the we constitute or have someone else constitute, or it's a matter of figuring out who is responsible and bringing the information to light. I'd be helpful to that.
Ms. Jim Batista?
Just regarding the question, Matthew, that you just brought up regarding finding out where the resources are or what's already being done. If the Office of the Assemblies can ever serve as that point of reference on any resolution that's been brought forth, please do let me know to make sure that we can put you in touch with all the right stakeholders.
Professor Lowe?
That was just kind of something out that Chief Governor has something to say about it. You know, I mean, I've been here a long time. If signage that exists was simply vague, we wouldn't need any of these committees. If you put a police officer, put them down at 9 o'clock, okay, at the intersection in front of City Hall, and handed out tickets for people that don't follow the signs, if you stop people from jaywalking, did you hand out tickets? You wouldn't need this committee. Okay. I'd like to hear what Chief Zomer actually about his four things of signage we have. We have crossing signals that count down to seconds, okay, out in front of Mill Street. Okay. Do you think anyone cares about that? We have to get a class.
I can commission them to walk down the street whenever I want.
Let's hear what she's already
had. And I'll just have my daughter refer to undergraduate. Start and they go and it's no motion. And that is true. You should basically know at a certain time of day, if it doesn't matter what the lights say, once they start, they continue. And you stop and you wait. And that is a real problem that undergraduates need to deal with.
First is Bailey, then it's Batista.
I don't even know how to respond to a lot of that. But are you saying that
it's
our fault? That's the
reason. Citizens in general don't obey the signage. And that's a real issue.
I'm going to bring it back to this conversation that's happening right now. And I wanted to say something very simple. I think that I'm happy to hear that work is being done on this already. While we're trying to figure out the next step and if this actually conflicts, would you mind connecting me and Juliana and the future essay leadership to the people who are working on this currently? Because I'm almost positive there's no students, to my knowledge, who are already participating.
Sure.
Yeah, so that's something that I'd like to take care of, and we can start doing that now.
Ms. Batista.
With all due respect, students jaywalk. I got it myself. But the point is that we had three student deaths on the campus.
But
my point is that we had three student deaths on this campus that I find entirely disrespectful to call students. And especially since students and undergraduates, I think we need to redirect this conversation back to what can we proactively do. Students are going to jaywalk, faculty are going to jaywalk, employees are going to jaywalk. What we really need to focus on is what are ways that we can effectively think about tangible ways to change the campus transportation atmosphere, the way that people get around, whether that be buses, whether that be walking, whether that be biking, and find ways to make it a more safe place for everyone. Not criticizing people for the way they
Hold on.
The undergrad for the, or we have two staff and one student.
We'll come back to the question booker.
But the point is that, you know, people are going to do that. What we need to do as a representative body is think about tangible ways to fix that. And it's going to happen. And I think we do also need to be respectful of the staff and the students that.
Ms. Wong.
Yes, I just want to echo what Juliana said. It's not just about students, but everyone who is in jail at some point. So it's more like find out one solution for it rather than just talking about people. And the other part with tech on is about the task force. I think there's current some students on it. At least we have at least one great student on the task force.
Okay, maybe it's the student who wasn't through the student task
force. Professor Hatch.
Yeah, I wanted to emphasize that my point about correlation and working together with transportation group is not because I'm accusing anybody or any group of violating the law or not obeying science. I just simply think that, in fact, I would add the planning, the campus planning department to be an important participant. We need to think more positively about flow. And rather than think about it as adversarial, you know, stop, go, some kind of, you know, series of, you know, laws. We need to have a thorough discussion which takes in mind traffic flows at particular times and all these other things. I mean, I've been here long enough that there were actually policemen at the junction in particular times of the year that would allow, you know, that would stop traffic.
On behalf of the sponsor, I think
I agree that the transportation group is doing something, but I also know from my experience that these groups get very independent and make up plans that don't take into account the broader picture.
Which is why I think the sponsor mentions the Vision Zero program, you know, about this design flow. We're almost out of time on this issue. What I'm sensing from members is, and we'll still recognize some people here, is that there's passion to definitely put some focus on this. This resolution may not be ideally worded yet, but clearly I see enough passion that we're going to get it there. If there's a committee that's already doing this, all right. We don't need to create necessarily a new one, but make it clear.
My point is that there's not a committee. The point is that there may be a committee that's thinking in one area, there's not thinking in the other. My point is that if we're going to abandon this resolution, or at least put it off, that at least we should send a sense to the body that people should be thinking very broadly about this issue in terms of planning the campus, traffic flows, transportation issues, and all the other areas rather than just science.
Professor Booker.
In transportation design, consider pedestrian of a mode of transport. What I'm trying to say here is that the FA has an opportunity here. Education of students is an important aspect of how we can keep our streets safe.
We have as a UA a responsibility to our community.
Exactly.
It's not just the students. Because you should have the same message in the faculty presentation.
Well, I agree.
Then take it there.
That's all I'm trying to say is that pedestrian safety is important. And that means that the FA could, and the faculty student, and the staff student, to all work on that issue. It's not just traffic itself.
Thank you. Professor Lowe.
I just wanted to clarify. I was just addressing the need for another committee. I wasn't addressing whether people got hit in crosswalks. I saw someone get hit on by a bus. I wasn't accusing anybody of not obeying law. I obey law probably as much as anybody. It's just that between campus planning and now it's not TAC anymore, whatever, we have representatives on those committees. And that those may be the appropriate committees to raise these issues as opposed to creating yet another committee that would then have to go to the other committee to do something. So what I was talking about was purely within the context of, do we need yet another committee?
If I may close, I think the intent for the group is group minus 4835 what we're asking for. The fact would be what this work we're trying to do with you. I think a lot of the points that you've raised are what we're asking for, and whether that be done through a working group we constitute, the message I think you all would echo that. There's going to be more attention paid to this. That's the fourth thing, that traffic flow, that's the redesign. I think, and that's the point of the solution is that, like, so I couldn't find information, and I had people helping me look, and it's really need to bring the information to light.
or create someone who will get it. So I think that's really important because I think we all can agree there needs to be some positive conversation and hopefully change that come out of this so we don't have a situation that happens.
And with that, let me bring this discussion item to close. I did notice that I failed to report in the executive committee update that I have received a response from President Skorton on UA Resolution 3. This was our denial to put limited voluntary advance notice into the campus code of conduct. He has acknowledged our decision. He disagrees with our decision, but he understands and has accepted it. And I will forward that to the CJC tomorrow. I should have already done that. I regret that I haven't. So he's acknowledged that. Is there any other business that the assembly needs to undertake? Yeah, hearing none, our next meeting is April 21st. It's a big meeting. I've asked everybody to please be on time. And the meeting is adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.